The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Generations Radio, where the focus is on our seniors and their families. We are here each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 6 p.m., bringing you resourceful information with our radio team of professionals in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore different ways to make life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors, right here on AM 690 The Answer. And now, here is our host and the publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
And welcome to back to Generations Radio. And just as we finished our summer, getting into the fall, winter season, we wanted to remind our families to be safe. Be safe on the streets, you pedestrians and you drivers, because we've had a rash of accidents on the highways, including with our pedestrians, and we just need to be safe this end of the year. So thank you for joining us. I am Percy Ihara, your publisher, editor of Generations Magazine, and the host of the Generations Radio and TV show. So don't forget to check us out on OC16. And thanks to Leah, our engineer here at the radio show, and Ron Darby, our Generations TV producer. It's been a great season, and we're going to continue on for 2019. But as I experienced aging, you know, with our family, with my friends, with our readers, and all the workshops that we do, we really come to find there's a couple of major issues that we're going to try and address more for 2019. And one of them is staying healthy, active aging. But the other big one, which is a very serious topic, which we want to spend the next few shows about, is about Alzheimer's and dementia on a bigger level, but also on a micro level here in Honolulu, Hawaii. So we have two experts, if I can say, here on a radio show, Mapu Ta'amu, who actually was on a cover a few issues ago.
Yeah, last year in December, January, that was the cover issue that I was on. Thank you for having me again.
Well, thank you. And the company that you have is Dementia Friends.
Memory Friends.
Oh, I'm sorry, Memory Friends.
Yeah, so I provide care consulting for people living with dementia and their caregivers, helping them to assess their situation at home, helping to provide routine based on what they like already and what they're already doing, what they can do, what they can't do, and trying to explain that more to caregivers so that they understand the progression of dementia and what they're getting into with this caregiving
Besides
job.
All the workshops you put on, right?
Yeah.
Trying to educate the public, which is really good. But you brought one, an expert here, which I like, another young one, because I think we need to get our younger population here to understand aging is a big, big topic. It's here to stay, and especially with healthcare. So Dr. Poki'i Balaz, is that pronounced it correctly?
Yes.
Oh, good. Welcome to the show. So give our audience, our radio show and our TV show, the listeners and viewers, a little bit of background on who you are.
Okay. Well, thank you, Percy, for having me. Mapu, for inviting me on the show. I appreciate that very much. It's an honor to be here. So who am I? My name is Dr. Poki'i Balaz. I am a provider, do primary care neurology, but I am also a caregiver advocate. So I am very much involved with Alzheimer's Association as a facilitator of their support group in Neal Valley, and I'm also part of their advocacy council. I am a facilitator for the Savvy Caregiver Program here in Hawaii and a consultant on one of their new projects. I also am a facilitator for the NTG, the Rose and Carter Institute Dealing with Dementia Program, also champion for Dementia Friends Community Initiative, and a PAC champion. But the most important role I play is as a caregiver. I am a full-time caregiver for my father, who has Alzheimer's disease. He's in the end stages. His requirement or his wish was to age in place, so I take care of him at home. He's nonverbal, bedbound, and needs 24/7 total care.
Wow, I give you a lot of credit. Besides all your academic work and things, you mentioned your primary and your biggest thing is caregiving.
So yes.
I give you a lot of credit. And you're a local girl.
Yes, I am. Born and raised here. Grew up in Waihila.
Yeah. And so when looking at you, I expect this actually somebody a little older, but seeing you so young, what got you involved to be a doctor, but let alone specialize in neurology?
So I always wanted to go into the medical field, and I'm not going to lie, when I first wanted to do dermatology and or be a surgeon.
Or a surgeon is really big sweep there.
It is, yes, I know. But they also kind of go together if you do like elective surgeries and, Botox. So that was where my focus. And then after I did, I graduated with my bachelor's and was leaving to go to, I had been recruited to the mainland to work. My father got his diagnosis. And even being in the field at that time, there wasn't this much of this resurgence and this focus on Alzheimer's. And so everybody turned to me because I was in the medical field. And I realized how much more I needed to know. And that's one big thing with caregivers is where do we find the resources? Where do we find the knowledge? What do we do? How do we do it? And this unexpected role comes up and you're just not prepared. And so when my life got involved with my father, then the switch happened and I started to go into my professional passion, which is the kupuna, this subpopulation, Alzheimer's dementia, geriatric, and then the brain just fascinated me. And geriatric neurology was what I love. It's what I love to do.
Well, that's great because I don't, Mapo, if you have any numbers, but the numbers are staggering in Hawaii. According to the last couple shows back we did on Alzheimer's dementia, from what I understand, about half of the people that actually have the disease are undocumented.
Yes.
That's going to change, I know, because I know Hawaii got a grant mm-hmm. to help doctors and families understand they need to be documented. Not like an immigrant documented, but documented they have Alzheimer's dementia. But what that does also is and Mapu, you can help step in here, is that the families need to know that what the disease is. Mm-hmm. They need to understand how it's going to affect the family. Nothing stops it or slows it down, right, Mapu?
Yeah, so what we know about medication so far, and Dr. Balaz can expand on this, is that the medications that are geared towards dementia or Alzheimer's, it helps to keep the person at their level that they are now as long as they can. It helps to input those, what is it called? Pokey, can you help me?
Sure. So Mapu is totally correct, though, that the medication, so we do not have a cure. We do not have anything that will stop the disease, turn back the time. But we do have things that will try and halt or slow the progression, like Mapu was saying. So a lot of people, when they think of dementia, think of Aricept and Namenda. And those are pretty much kind of the prevalent Aricept, a colonase inhibitor that we use for more mild to moderate, Namenda moderate to severe. But I would like to say, everybody, please check with your providers. Everybody's case is individualized, and my information is more general. So what these medicines try to do is improve memory, thinking, or improve mental function, your ADLs, and simple tasks. And so those are kind of the big things. But there are also non-pharmacological things that people can do also. Now, if we're talking about over-the-counter things and alternative treatments, a lot of those aren't FDA approved, and the only thing that I can say is to please do your research about those. But we do know that things like omega-3s can help reduce the risk of heart disease or stroke, and what is good for the heart is good for the brain. And then also doing things, simple things, modify risk factors such as getting enough sleep and relaxation, exercising, eating correctly.
Yeah, that helps with everything, you know. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of our listeners that may have just come into the picture with their parents, just learning the words Alzheimer's dementia, really quick, if you can, the difference between Alzheimer's dementia, because when I first got here involved with seniors 16, 17 years ago, I had no clue. All I knew was yet it was memory loss.
Yes.
But there's a lot more to that, isn't there? I mean, there's several different types, which we don't need to go into, but of different types of dementia, right?
So there's actually an umbrella term, and dementia is that umbrella term. It's the main category of cognitive impairment.
So I thought it was actually Alzheimer's.
Yeah, not exactly. Okay. So Alzheimer's is just one type of dementia. Dementia means that something's going on with the brain that's inhibiting the person to function independently by themselves at home. So they need more supervision and more hands-on care as they regress. Alzheimer's is just one type of dementia. There's also vascular dementia, frontal temporal dementia, Lewy body dementia, more than 80 different kinds of dementia. Mm-hmm. Also related to concussions, lifelong alcoholism, anything that pretty much affects the brain, you may develop some type of dementia.
Is Alzheimer's the main term everybody hears about first because that's who actually founded Dr. Alzheimer's?
Dr. Alzheimer's did found it, and the reason why people are hearing about Alzheimer's so much is because it's the most prevalent type of dementia. About 60 to 80% of cases following
60 to 80% is Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's. And so that's and you are right. There is a big confusion. So a lot of people say, well, my mom doesn't have dementia. She has Alzheimer's. So dementia is the umbrella term, like Mapu said, and then what type of dementia you have is usually the follow-up question.
So Alzheimer's, if 60 to 80% of people that have dementia is a form of Alzheimer's, what type of dementia is that Alzheimer's then? What are some different characteristics of that?
Well, of Alzheimer's disease. So one good thing is that the Alzheimer's Association has a great plethora of resources.
They do.
And so one of the things that they did create is knowing the 10 signs for early detection. And so when we're talking about Alzheimer's, one of the biggest things is the memory loss. And that's usually what people notice first is the repetitive questions. They're not remembering people. They're not remembering things they did. Or I told mom to be ready for dinner and then mom's not ready for dinner. So a lot of it begins at home with the caregivers, just noticing that something is different. Now, I will say that some people with the disease do make the appointments themselves. They notice something's not right. But other things to look for are things like if your care recipient is having problems in planning or solving problems, they're not being able to complete familiar tasks at home or at leisure. They're having a lot of confusion, which is a hallmark of this disease, with time or place. They can't understand visual images, spatial relationships. They have problems with speaking or writing, misplacing things, poor judgment, withdrawal from social activities, and changes in mood and personality.
I have all those. Seriously.
A lot of
my son and my wife probably go, wow, dad, you know? I forget things because my mind moves so quickly, and I have so many different things that we're working on today. But that sounds like all types of dementia, no?
So it is for all types of dementia. Now, if we're getting into what would separate Alzheimer's from vascular dementia, or what would separate it from Lewy body, so for those kind of things, again, I can generals, but it would really be based on the workup. That is how we determine. Do you have dementia? Then what type is really coming in and seeing usually starts off with your primary care provider, and they're all wonderful at doing this. And we do tests because we look for reversible causes first. We always want to make sure that we get those off the table, because if there's something that we can do to reverse this, then we can take care of it right away. If not, we're going to do some blood work. We're going to do some imaging. But a lot of it is really based off of the stories that we hear from the family members, from the person. And then we take all that information and we put it together. And then we either come out with dementia or your type Alzheimer's. And a lot of times a geriatrician, a neurologist, a neuropsychologist, or a general psychologist is part of that team. And so for like Lewy body dementia, a lot of people, when they think about that, they think of hallucinations and delusions. Mm-hmm. Vascular dementia, they're thinking confusion, disorientation, trouble speaking, because usually that comes from, you know, having a stroke.
Having a stroke.
So
that would affect more of your mobility, your...
That could very much come depending on what type of stroke you had, you know, how prevalent it was. But cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes is a risk factor, you know, for it, high cholesterol. So a lot of times we're talking about this, and I'll probably say it more than once, but what is good for the heart is good for the brain. So knowing everybody is very well versed in what we should do for heart care, and think people a lot of times think of the heart as the center of the body and forget about the brain. But if you do what's good for the heart, then you'll reduce your risk factors for getting dementia also.
So some situations, maybe just changing your diet could possibly trigger something?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a diet that we like to use called the Mind Diet. So a lot of people hear about the Mediterranean diet.
The Mayan?
Mind, M-I-N-D.
Okay.
Yes, I know. Sorry about that. Okay. But the Mind Diet takes the Mediterranean and the DASH diet and puts it together. It was created at Rush University by Dr. Morris. And it is found that if you follow the diet pretty strictly, you can reduce your risk about 50%.
50%?
50%. 35% if you follow
Sign
it.
Sign me up.
So right? I honestly do it and make my family do it.
So can you tell our audience real quickly, what is a Mind Diet?
Sure. So they tried to make it really simple. And so it's kind of looking at things as increasing like your vegetables once a day, or having nuts about 5 times a week, berries twice a week, beans 3 times a week, whole grains, you know, 3 times a day, limiting red meat. So we're looking more at having fish once a week, poultry times 2 weeks, using olive oil to cook with. And I know that I rattled that off and it's really fast, but if you just Google the Mayan diet, there's a lot of information that come up. It's really easy to follow. And that was the point of it, was to make it simple. And I always tell people who are going to do a new diet is to just start slow. Don't look at the diet and try to do it all tomorrow. Just pick one thing, focus on that for a week, and then maybe the next thing incorporate something else into it.
I do all that. I just add on a potato chip here and there, a donut here and there, a beer here and there.
Well, in this diet, you can have a glass of wine a day.
Oh, really?
So
I don't eat meat that much. But I do all of that, including my son. I make my son eat vegetables, which is amazing. He does it, and he doesn't use any dressing.
Mm-hmm.
Just lettuce and tomatoes.
Like
that's
me.
It.
Yes.
But he
that
eats it. Awesome. You know why? So people would ask, wow, your son eats a lot of vegetables. I said, he goes, how do you do that? I said, he doesn't have a choice. He can't eat dinner if he doesn't eat his vegetables first.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's amazing. When I started him at 3 years, 2 or 3 years old, and now he's just automatic. And that's why I tell other parents, like, you know, he plays sports, so when we have these team potlucks afterwards, all the parents look at me like, wow, your son eats a lot of vegetables. I say, yeah, he doesn't have a choice. Give your son a choice, he's not going to eat it, right?
Mm-hmm. So it starts at home. Yep.
Okay, so hopefully we're good at that, except for we got to cut down on the chips and the donuts.
Yeah,
like
cheese,
that.
Red meat, fats, fried food.
Cheese, yeah. I kind of cut out the cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
And else should I cut out? Besides, I can't cut out the beer and wine.
So. Maybe just limit it.
Okay.
I just say moderation.
Okay, yeah.
We all have things that we love. Like, I love ice cream. But I just have to moderate that and contain it.
Okay, gotcha. So I didn't realize that Parkinson's is a form of dementia.
Yes.
Oh. And so how does that, because that doesn't happen automatically either.
No.
I know somebody got it at 35 years old. We know Pat Bemis, who's mm-hmm. going to come on and talk about her husband. He got it 45?
Before 40, yeah.
Before 40.
Yeah, Parkinson's and dementia, it is pretty prevalent in the community. It does happen, but there's a lot of the treatments are the same. But again, looking at a workout for Parkinson's and dementia would still be, I would just encourage people to go in. And usually if you do have Parkinson's, your neurologist or the team is already has that on their radar, and so they will be monitoring and looking for that and continuing to ask questions if things are changing or happening. And some people do get that confused with Lewy body because they can kind of intermix or have the same kind of presentation. But they are finding, as they're looking more into your research, that they really are two separate things. But it's, when we're talking about dementia in general, it's just looking for things that I had explained earlier, and then changes in their way of thinking, and even for both of all the diseases, you know, they're having delusions or hallucinations. And then if you think you are, to just very much go in and start with your primary care provider and then work your way up to the specialist.
So here at Dr. Pokii Bala is talking about dementia and Alzheimer's, and with Mapu Ta'amu, who is an expert caregiver, if I can say that now, Mapu, an expert caregiver, because I'll tell you, I've learned a lot from you, even though you're much younger than myself, but your background is great. But do you see families coming to you not knowing what's wrong with mom or dad, or do they already know but they need to know how to handle their caregiving needs?
So the families that I come into contact with, they already understand that something's wrong with their loved one, and they understand that they need some expert help or some guidance is what I provide. So I meet with them one-on-one for an hour or two, and we just talk about the past, the present, what's happening, what have you noticed, what are you presently doing. And then we set up another meeting where I come in and I actually assess the person, and from then try to create a routine so that the caregivers can follow. And also interjecting some education as well. I'm a certified PAC trainer.
So PAC trainer means?
Oh, I'm sorry. Positive approach to care. So that was coined by Tipa Snow, who is an occupational therapist with over 30 years of experience.
And she's a national.
International.
International.
Yes. So.
Trainer of this training.
Yeah, she started with the Alzheimer's Association doing trainings for them, and then slowly branched off and did trainings for other universities and care homes and things like that. And from all of that experience, she coined the positive approach to care, and now she has more than 100 trainers under her and different kinds
and you,
of things.
And you are one of?
I am one of.
In Hawaii, and Hawaii is only a few, right? A handful, right?
Yeah, so we all follow under the mentorship of Dorothy Colby. Tipo Snow came down last year in 2017, where about 20 of us got certified to be trainers. And I want to say maybe half, not even half of us, have continued our trainings. And
well, it's not easy. I mean, you got to really have a lot of love and passion for this disease. I mean,
and experience.
Yeah, but you're a caregiver as well.
Yeah, so what TIPA actually taught us, in my opinion, is how to be a good teacher. There's a thing called the adult experiential learning cycles, where you hit all the different types of learners. So if you learn visually, if you're a verbal learner, if you're kinesthetic, we have activities that you stand up and you do so you don't get tired. So the way that she made her program is it's so you won't get bored. It's not just a lecture. It's an interactive workshop where you get involved and you actually feel what the patient feels and why you as a caregiver should do more or do less of so-and-so.
She has some videos online.
There are videos. She's on YouTube.
How do you spell that? T-E-E-P-A-H?
No H. So Tipa Snow is T-E-E-P-A and then Snow, S-N-O-W. Oh, so okay. If you YouTube Tipa Snow or dementia videos, Tipa Snow, Google her if you want to. But
yeah, they're pretty good. I, if you have family members, everybody I talk to that I know they're running into this issue, is I tell them, you got to understand the disease first and get some expert help and consultation, because I know about it, but I would tell you, call up Poki'iwa or Mapu and get some training, get some understanding of the disease, because, you know, do you have a number of how many people have dementia, Alzheimer's in Hawaii?
Yeah, so in Hawaii right now, we have about 28,000 people living with dementia that are documented. And yes, and we do know that number is very much underrepresented. As far as caregivers, we have about 66,000 caregivers
caring
alone.
Caring
for that 28.
And
yes.
If half of them are documented, that means it could be another 28,000 with the disease.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you, I know about 10 myself personally that have not been documented. We're trying to get them to understand that they need to talk to the doctor. But you know what? I mean, from your experience, I've seen it. I've heard stories that the doctor don't want to document it.
I have heard those stories too. And I think sometimes, you know, one, it could be experience. How much do they have with this? Sometimes there is still the idea that this is just a normal part of aging. How do we know that this really is dementia? And that's really where experience with your primary care provider. And they usually are very good at, if they feel they're not comfortable to, you know, refer the patient on to a neurologist or a geriatrician. But I think it starts with being the caregiver. You have to be the advocate. If you think that something is wrong, you need to continue to advocate and push, even if your provider is maybe on the fence. Another thing is that, you know, once a diagnosis is put down for a person, we really want to make sure it's the right diagnosis, which is why we look for reversible causes first, because it's not easy to then remove a diagnosis off once
right.
We've given it. And so I think that is another reason why some providers are hesitant. They really want to make sure. But we need the diagnosis, because from the diagnosis, then we can get resources and things to happen. And the earlier we know about the diagnosis, the earlier we can intervene, because a lot of times people are getting the diagnosis at the moderate or at later stages. And, you know, at that time, there was so much more that we could have done.
Yeah, and families just struggle with this.
Yeah, they do. In the home is much different. I also work at a care home that specializes in memory care. And being at home, seeing the caregiver burnt out, coming home from the respite that I just provided her so she can go to work, and just watching her get herself into the mood of being a caregiver, doing her second job, it's different than, you know, I come to the care home, I say hi to my staff, coworker, friends, and then we all leave at the same time. So caregivers at home, I give you a lot of props, and doing it alone is not easy.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that a lot of families, a lot of times they say, I'm the champion caregiver, I'll do everything, right? I'm going to knock myself out. Nobody can do it better than me. And they don't look at resources. And that's one of the things that Generations Magazine provides. In fact, you can go online to generations808.com, check out our website, because our new issue is out there. If not, go. All the state libraries in the state of Hawaii have our magazine. The YMCA, all the Times Pharmacy, but this issue is called Caregiving in the Cycle of Life. And one of you wanted to quote the phrase from Rosalind Carter? Go ahead. The Rosalind Carter quote. You guys don't know the Rosalind? You're too
Not
young.
By heart.
Not by heart. Well, there are four types of people in this world. And actually, it was actually a staff member of the Rosalind Carter Foundation that told her about this quote, and she made it famous, is that there are four types of people in the world. People that have been a caregiver, people that are going to be a caregiver, people that are caregivers, and people that are going to need a caregiver. So we have four people on the cover that talk about their process, what they're going through with caregiving. And one of them is actually a personal friend of mine, my classmate from school. And everybody here actually are directly involved with Alzheimer's and dementia. I believe all their all three of the families that are experiencing it, and Carly McKay, who's going to need a caregiver, even though she's pretty sharp, she may down the road. But it is something that we're trying to highlight more as our community grows and lives longer, and we have to really face this reality of life. And so, anyway, so we're going to take a short break. And come back, talk more about caregiving in Hawaii and how people deal with this, and come back and talk to Dr. Balazs about the disease Alzheimer's and dementia. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back there after a short break.
When you feel like Vegas, there's just one place to stay. Grab a drink at the Holo Holo Bar. There's just one place to play. We got a fresh hot look, a new sports book. We got those local meals, just like Auntie Cook's. Aloha spoken here.
Check out the Cow's new renovated look and see why the Cow is Hawaii's favorite place in Vegas to stay and play.
If you're new to Medicare, we can help you work your way through all the questions, the details, and the headaches. Generations TV has gathered experts in the field to help you find the answers. This is Navigating Medicare.
Hi, I'm back again. This is Ed speaking on Medicare Hints.
A lot of people may not realize that they may qualify for extra financial assistance to help pay for their premiums and prescription drug costs, depending on their income and their total assets. These savings can be especially helpful for seniors who are on a fixed income.
Find out if you qualify. Call us.
Helping you work your way through the confusion. Navigating Medicare. Brought to you today by Financial Benefits Insurance, serving the entire state of Hawaii from the corner of Pi'ikoi and Kapi'olani in Honolulu.
Got Vegas on your mind? Get Vacations Hawaii on the line. Vacations Hawaii offers weekly 4 and 5 night Honolulu to Vegas packages, which include 3 meals daily from $6.99. Stay at Hawaii's favorite casinos, California, Fremont, Main Street Station, and Orleans Hotel. Vacations Hawaii will get you there in comfort on deluxe wide-body 767 planes with complimentary in-flight hot meal service. Vacations Hawaii's frequent flyer program gives you future travel discounts and credits. So if you're ready to win big, call Vacations Hawaii at 591-4777 or visit voidvacationshawaii.com.
Hi, I'm Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group. Let us be your Medicare resource throughout the year. We have agents throughout the islands to be of assistance to you. So if you have Medicare questions, we have the answers. Call us at 808-591-4877. Again, 808-591-4877. 591-4877. Thank you. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today, more than ever, we local people are living longer than any other state in the union, with more seniors, baby boomers, and caregivers. Generations Radio promotes the importance to be proactive as we all age. The radio team will focus on issues facing our seniors and their families, finding resources to navigate healthy aging along with financial, legal, and caregiving information. So join Percy E. Hauer from 5 until 6 each Saturday, right here on AM 690, The Answer.
5914777
We go play.
Complete 4 and 5 night packages from $6.99. Vacations Hawaii, your favorite connection to Vegas.
Focusing on the issues facing our seniors and their families today. Here's our Generations Radio host, Percy Ihara.
So welcome back to Generations Radio. And don't forget, you can watch all our past TV shows, our radio shows, and our past issues of Generations Magazine on our website, generations808.com. And we just did a review of our website recently, actually 2 days ago. And we found, besides the current issue people look at, the most popular place they go to is all the past issues, which is kind of shocking to me. Calendar is next, so we're going to actually build out a calendar where we have more events going on throughout the year. And we're going to invite you to your nonprofits, any workshops, classes that deal with senior things, to post on our website directly. So you can always just contact us through the Generations 808 website. But yeah, this current issue right now is getting very popular. The four types of people in the world, people that have been caregivers, people that are caregivers, people that are going to be caregivers, and people that are going to need care of themselves. So it's a great read. I've been getting tons of compliments since it's been out. And it's only been out about a week and a half. So check it out. We are running out, I have to say this. So thanks to our staff at Generations Magazine, because we run out every issue. And if you can't find the last issue, the Gopher Broke issue of Generations Magazine, that was August, September, it's gone. Because it was the fastest distributed magazine we've ever had. It was actually all gone within about 5-6 weeks. And we had to save a bunch for the senior fair. So Stacey Hayashi and our team of promoters of the TV of the movie, we did a great job. And so thank you to all the team. You can still buy it online. You can find it on a Facebook page, Gopher Broke Facebook page. Actually, on Vimeo as well. It's on a Vimeo. You can buy it or rent it. But it's a great movie. And the most this recent one that came out recently is the best I guess, edition, because it's been reviewed, edited many times until the one right now is running. So it's all powered at Wego Theater, unfortunately, but hopefully next year you'll see it again. We'll bring it out again. Otherwise, look for it online, the Gopher Broke movie. So we're here with Mapu Ta'amu, expert caregiver, and Dr. Poki'i Balaz. And ladies, thanks for joining us. And like I said, I love to have young people here because... You know, I'm not going to be in this business for, 20, 30 years. So you guys coming up are great at such a young age, because I only got involved in this area of industry at 42 years old.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I had...
You did all the time, right?
Yeah. But I had a keen interest in healthcare since high school, and currently I'm 25. But a few years ago, I would attend all these AARP events, and everybody looks at me and they're like, oh, where's your mom? And I said, no, I'm here for myself. I want to learn all this stuff. Oh, but you're not old enough to not be here, but, be a member. And so why are you here? So I've been getting a little bit of backlash. But as I, stand my ground, and Percy helps me to meet other healthcare professionals.
But you learn, educate yourself, equip True. Yourself and your professional background. But you have the firsthand experience. That's what a lot of people don't have.
Yeah, and I've worked at a care home for about 7 years doing the activities as well as nursing duties. And so I think of myself as a patient advocate versus a caregiver advocate, because I understand what the patient is going through, why they're reacting. It's not their fault, it's the caregiver's fault. And for me, seeing the patient's perspective, I can help caregivers by explaining what your mom is feeling and why she's reacting that way.
Yeah. Actually, I met you at our Aging in Place workshop with your mom.
I did bring my mom.
2 or 3 years ago?
2016. I remember because I was sitting with my mom and I was like, Mom, I think that's Percy Ihara. And she's like, who's that? And I was like, he's the reason we're all here. So since that, Percy's took me under his wing, and thank you for that opportunity.
Well, like I said, I'll take you to the water, but you got to drink it. And you've done a great job and you learned a lot. And actually, from that 2 years ago when I first met you to today, you've really grown as a... not only as a person, but as an expert in the caregiving field. So thank you.
Yeah.
So Dr. Poki, your age too. You're not even 30 yet probably, and you have a wealth of knowledge. No, don't tell me you're 40 now, okay?
Thank you for that compliment. I am older than 30, but okay. But I do appreciate that. Most people think that I am under 30, which always makes me feel
great. You're
going
to want that when you're my age,
Yeah.
But like I said, Parkinson's, when I was talking earlier in the first half of the show, I have several personal friends of mine. Well, three of them, personal friends of mine that got Parkinson's at a young age, like 30s. Mm-hmm. So if that's part of dementia, why did they get it so early? Because a lot of times, Alzheimer's, you don't get it until later on in life.
Well, that's true. And so most people don't get it until we're looking later in life. So at 65 years old, one in 5 or 10, and then at 83 we're jumping to 1 in 3. But we do have early onset dementia, Alzheimer's.
It's growing,
and
yes.
It is growing. And, you know, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that by the time the symptoms show, you have the disease about 10 years or more before that.
Right. And it doesn't really come out right away.
No, the symptoms. And in the early stages, they're really good at getting you to think that you don't have the disease. So like my father, a lot of people, when we would bring it up that he had Alzheimer's, were like, no, he can't, he's fine, I just had a conversation with him, he answered all my questions, the doctors, he answers, but we would notice the little giggles or the laughs, you know, that, and we knew that he really didn't understand the question, but they're just very
good at
answering it. Yes. As far as why are people getting early onset, you know, research is still coming up with that. We do know that, you know, if you have it, sometimes it can be more of a hereditary, and that if you have a family member, then you have a higher risk of getting the disease. So
right.
Like for me, I'm at risk. My father had it. His father had it. And my father got it pretty early. He was a little right before 60. It took us, in talking about what we were talking about earlier, you know, we had a hard time getting the disease too. It took us about 2 years to get him to be diagnosed with dementia from the first time we went in to talk to his physician about we're noticing these changes. And so he was fairly young. My father is only 77 now, and we didn't even get the diagnosis until 2010.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So is for like Parkinson's, though, I know, I have a personal friend of mine that actually thrives very well. He has an insert somewhere, his neck or sort of shoulder, and it triggers sending dopamine to the brain or something like that. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. So that's
but
more.
He can survive, but he can't work. But he can drive. He can still drink, and he can exercise a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But why? How is that effective when you can't do other things for dementia or Alzheimer's?
So the dopamine is working more for his Parkinson's. So if we're now talking about the dementia part, why is it not working? For dementia, we don't have a cure. That's why. We don't have medications or anything that can stop or halt it. It's progressive and it's irreversible. Most we can do is slow down. So the medications or the treatments we have, like that treatment for him, I think is more geared towards, and again, I don't know his case, but that's more geared towards the Parkinson and helping with the rigid motions or maybe his posture. I'm not sure where
right,
he's in this
does.
Disease.
He doesn't shake as much.
Yes.
And he can still walk pretty well.
Mm-hmm, and still function. So when we're looking at dementia, it's more that this disease is it's exactly that. It's progressive and irreversible. So what do we do? So we're looking at things that we can do to help the person remain functional and in the community for as long as possible, and which is really hard to do. You know, there's a lot of things that come with it. And like, luckily for us, we're able to keep my father in the community, but it's not an option for a lot. And it was, you know, it's really hard. As I watched him when I came back home, my mother called me to come back home because she felt she couldn't take care of him anymore. So I left my job and returned back to Hawaii. And it was hard to watch him decline over the years and his functioning going down and having to know when to step in and what to do and when to take over more and how to change things around the house, your behaviors, your schedule, just to accommodate and to keep him, his quality of life, and to keep him functional for as long as possible.
I know for a lot of listeners probably listening right now can relate with you, but there's so many different things that a family experiences, or the disease may take you one way or the other way. It could be slower, faster. There's no path of regularity at all, is that?
No, everybody's, so we have similarities through our stories, similarities with the disease, what people are going to experience, but everybody's story is different and individualized. And I always try to point that out. So although caregivers, a lot of us can relate, and like when I see my patients or I'm doing the savvy facilitating, I can relate and I understand what they're going through. Everybody still has their own story, and we are not able to tell anybody, oh, you'll be in the beginning stages for so long, then you'll be in the middle. They can rapidly progress. My father progressed through the middle stages very rapidly, where most people linger the most. Mm. And so he went from mild to moderate to boom. He was into the end stages. And that's the biggest question. Well, how long do I have? How much time do I have? And we don't have that answer.
Right. I mean, I can tell. I have a family member that's been has dementia for 10 years. Still mobile, still can walk around.
Mm-hmm.
Versus I have a family close by to where I live, and mom's been pretty much bedbound for about 8 years.
Yes.
But she's still thriving. She goes to the adult day center once, twice a week, comes back. Her mobility is slowly going down, but her brain is still
I mean, she can still survive. And I told my cousin about my auntie. I think I'm not a doctor, but I think it could be another 5 to 10 years.
Very much it could be. They didn't think my father was going to survive when he went on hospice. They gave the 6 months diagnosis. It's 3 years later, and he's still here.
And, you know, I've seen a lot of people pass, and it's not because of dementia, or it's not because of their different kind of dementia. It's because maybe they had COPD, chronic pulmonary obstructive disease, or a heart attack, or a stroke. So not all the time will your person die of this disease.
Yeah. So I want to spend a lot more time now talking about the caregiver. Because I don't know what's the calculation figure. 70% are women, maybe more.
Oh yeah, women are the number one. Yeah, we have more women, and you know that's for a various reason, societal. You know, a lot of times women take over, but women live longer. Yes,
they live longer.
Oh, thank
you.
They
have a stress better. They're more tolerant.
I'll keep going.
You know, they can cook better. You know, I just think they can, and I personally think they can handle stress better.
Yes, stress.
Not maybe not my wife, but I think most women can. I'm just joking, of course. But I just know that, and they can fight harder, and they won't give up. You know, because it's a long battle. I mean, I have personal friends that have been dealing with this for 10 years, and you can probably tell people in Mapo that the caregiver really needs to stay healthy.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, talking about female caregivers, I feel like they have that maternal instinct to also give care. A lot of families that I see are taking care of their mother-in-law, not just their mother, but their mother-in-law too, for their husband. Or they go with their husband and the husband speaks, but it's really the woman that makes
right,
decisions.
Exactly right. But self-care is so important.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
So what you as a caregiver and you as a healthcare professional, what do you do to keep your sanity? You just look pretty sane to me right now.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Again, I love these compliments. They just keep coming. For self-care, there's a lot I can do. It's very hard. So for me, what do I do personally? So I guess if I can back it up and please reroute me if you need to. But I think for caregivers, one of the things is knowing what to expect or what to look forward to, and this does tie in with self-care, because when this disease hits, most people jump into this unexpected role. And this unexpected role is called caregiving or being a caregiver, but this role is encompassed of so many different roles that a lot of us receive formal training for that caregivers don't. And so they get pushed into these roles, and these roles I'm talking about is like nursing or being an aide. You know, you're administering medications, you're changing, you're being a chef, you're being a social worker, you're calling to make appointments, you're being a financial advisor. And you may not be all of these roles at one time, but as the disease progresses, you begin to pick up more and more roles because you become more involved. And with that comes the physical demands and the emotional roller coaster that takes you through the whole journey. And so knowing what to expect and educating yourself and knowing the resources is one of the first things to do for self-care. Because when this thing hits, it hit me like a brick wall. The social worker didn't know what to do or where the resources were. The physician kind of gave a general statement about what was going to happen. And if I had known what I know now, I would have been much better prepared. Things would have been different. And I so wish I had taken PAC and Savvy, or that it had been around for me when I became a caregiver.
The training course. So you took the training course as well?
No, not when I became a caregiver. The Savvy Caregiving, I got trained 2 years ago when Kenneth Hepburn, who was a principal investigator who developed the Savvy Caregiver program, which was born in Minnesota and in response to the need for programs like this in the community. So it's not a support group. It is a training program that gives the knowledge, skills, and outlook for caregivers to be successful and be savvy along this journey. And so that's one thing that I...
Now, that's the husband and wife team from... the Minnesota, the famous Minnesota Hospital. What's the name of it?
In Minnesota, I'm thinking of Emory and University, but that's a university.
Are you talking about the Barclays?
Yes.
Yeah, Barclays.
Yes.
Is that them? They were in Hawaii a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that was for the Dementia Navigator.
Mm-hmm. Right, that was to train professionals.
Yes.
What does SAVI stand for, by the way, you know?
It's not an acronym. It's the Savvy Care Program, because our goal is to make the person a savvy caregiver.
I got it.
And but in there, one of the core concepts that we do go over, which you were going to, was was self-care, which is very important. And going back to that topic, I think caregivers, we hear it all the time. Caregivers hear it all the time. You have to take care of yourself. You have to take care of yourself. And it kind of goes in one ear and out the other. And it's very much from the standpoint of when do I have this time? How? Your life becomes so enveloped. And I totally understand that my life revolved around my father. I mean, it halted my professional life. It interfered with my relationship. It interfered with my family relationship. And as a caregiver, you become isolated too, just like the person with dementia. And, you know, saying that, though, I would not turn back the clock of times, or I would do it all over again for my father. I mean, his smile, and he was an amazing person, and I cannot thank him enough for the life he gave me. So I would do it again. But I try to really reiterate to people that you need to do things to rejuvenate yourself. I'm not talking about running errands or catching up on things, but you need to do things, whether it's sitting in your garden for 5 minutes, taking a walk, taking a bath, closing the door, running down to the beach, which is my favorite thing because I grew up. And at one point in my life, I hadn't seen the beach in almost a year, you know, wow. And it drains me so much. I've been through the burnout. I tell people, think of the airlines. They tell you, put the oxygen mask on yourself before the next person. You really need to take care of yourself. And I ask caregivers, if something was to happen to you today, what would happen to the person? So in the program, one thing that I make people do is I have them take a sheet of paper and write blocks of 5, 10, 15, and 30 minutes. And I have my patients do this too. And I have people write down, if they just had that time free, what would they want to do? What would they like to do? A bubble bath, read a book, take a walk. And after they write that down, I tell them, now here's your list. When your person is content and involved, you take out this list, and when you have 10 or 15 minutes, you don't sit there and think, what can I do? Which is what most of us caregivers do. We're like, oh my God, I got an hour. What do I do? It takes us an hour to figure it out. You just look at the list, you know what to do, and you go and you do it.
That's a great tip. That's a really good tip.
Yes.
I think, well, we had the professional caregiver guy on our show a few months ago, Dave Nassani, and he wrote a very good book if you can get a hold of it. If not, I have a copy. I can give you my copy. It's called It's My Life Too.
Mm-hmm.
And he does that skit about using the oxygen mask and asking for help. That was one thing, too. In fact, after a couple of years, he didn't even think of himself. He didn't say, what's a caregiver? He goes, and he was doing all the things you just said. And he didn't realize he was a caregiver for his wife.
Mm-hmm.
He's been caregiving for his wife now 22 years.
Oh, wow.
22 years. And I met them both. Amazing story. He actually spoke at our conference at our Aging in Place this year. But you're so right. You have to be able to take some time for yourself. But you know what he talks about also. A lot of people that are taking care of their loved one, they think they can do it all.
Yes.
And they can't.
No. I was one of those. Well, I didn't have a choice. Also, at the same time, you know, for some people, they don't have other resources or family members. Also, remember, cultural things come into play, especially here in Hawaii. Even in my culture, although it's an honor and a privilege, we don't look at it as a burden. In Hawaiians, we look at taking care of the kupuna, who is, you know, the impediment of everything, as an honor and a privilege. And that is what it is to me. But you can't deny the stress and burnout that comes with it. And for the first 5 years, I did it all on my own. And I was tired and exhausted and burnt out. And then I finally had to ask my family to step in. And so now my nieces and nephews come in, and I have to acknowledge that I have an amazing other half who steps in and comes home from work and then, you know, tells me, okay, you go and take your break. And he comes in and steps in to take over for my father, who's not even his father, and, you know, takes him out of the bed so that my father can sit in the garden for a few moments. My nieces and nephews come around their school schedule to, you know, help me just for a couple hours so that I can just go in and do something, anything, just for myself, or go to work.
Yeah, it's so important. So we're here talking with Mapu Ta'amu, expert caregiver, and Dr. Poki'i Balaz, talking about Alzheimer's dementia. But Mapu, what I liked about you did our Aging in Place this year, and you put on those skits, and you train people on how to handle common things that caregivers go through. Can you just mention one or two things like how do you approach somebody that has Alzheimer's dementia, or how do you redirect them?
Yeah, so a lot of times, from what I hear from families and also co-workers, is that the person that they're caring for currently is getting into mischief or taking things, putting them in other places, And Percy talks about redirection. That's exactly what you need to do. But there is a way that you approach the situation. As a caregiver, we need to be detectives. So we assess.
You need to be a detective?
Yes. We are constantly assessing, thinking about what we can do next. Will this work? Will it not? What happened last time? And then having those aha moments so that you can change the way that you care for your person. So with this positive physical approach that we teach at our training workshops, you want to be in their visual field so that they can first see you. Otherwise, if you go to touch them, they will most likely get startled. And
that's why I didn't realize, you're the first person that when you guys did a workshop, that your vision can sometimes diminish, or how do you explain to how it kind of like goes like that?
Yeah, your peripheral vision.
They can't see it on TV, they can't, but on the radio show, they can't. So kind of give them a verbal visual.
Okay, sure. So with normal aging, even our peripheral vision or our side view that goes for the top and the bottom is a 360 field of vision. It diminishes over time. So we see less and less of our sides and more of what's in front of us.
Is it with all forms of dementia?
Yeah, with brain failure in general. Wow. Yeah. So your peripheral vision will slowly narrow to about early stage dementia, which is if you hold your hands out in front of you at about 12 inches apart and you make a nice round circle, that is approximately the view of an early stage person with dementia. And that is equivalent as a snorkel vision. So if you take both hands and you make it into a snorkel mask and you put it up to your eyes, take a look around, notice what you can and cannot see below you, above you, on the side of you. Yeah, so if you can't see, but Percy's sitting next to me. If I was in early stage dementia with this scuba mask on, I cannot see him right now. He is directly to my left.
I'm big enough.
I cannot see him. But it's that peripheral vision that is diminishing. So that is something.
It gets worse from there?
Yes. And as caregivers, we don't understand this brain change because it's happening internally. If, for say, somebody with COPD, we would know that something's wrong with the lungs because they're either hooked up to oxygen or hunching over and having a hard time breathing. So with dementia, as caregivers, we need to switch our mindset and try to see what it's like from their perspective. What are they perceiving from me? How am I approaching? Do I look angry? Am I coming off as a threat to them? Is that why they're reacting this way? So a lot of detective work is involved. Okay.
A couple of minutes. So the other one is how do you redirect people? Whether it's your family member or somebody that you're caregiving for.
So with redirection, you want to play to their interests. So if they love chocolate and they're touching something that they shouldn't be, I would grab maybe a chocolate bar or something and show it to them. Say, "Hey, Auntie, I got some chocolate. Come with me." So you're taking their attention away from whatever they were getting into and refocusing it onto the chocolate bar that they like. If you give them something that they don't like, say it's a piece of meat, "Oh, Auntie, come, I got some steak for you." And she doesn't like steak. She's never eaten steak in her life. She will not listen to you. Mm. So it really matters what the person likes, what they're interested in to have a successful redirection.
Well, anyway, ladies, thank you so much. That was a quick 1 hour, wasn't that?
That was.
So any last words, Dr. Balazs?
Yes, I would just like to encourage people that if they're going through this to just know their resources and look for it. And I think one of the best resources is like the PAC training or the SAVI training. It can really help. There's evidence-based behind it to help. And just know your resources, like the Alzheimer's Association support groups and other things
really
you need help with.
I recommend everybody go.
Yes. Also, elderly affairs, for things like people, I think, don't think about these things. Like if you need help with house cleaning or Meals on Wheels can help with meals and things like that. So there's a lot of resources in the community. And, you know, Mapu and I would be more than happy to help people direct them to where they need
to go. So if they want to contact you, are they allowed to contact you? How
yes.
do they get a hold of you?
So you can either contact me by email, which is pokiibalaz@gmail.com, P-O-K-I-I, be like boy, A-L-A-Z, or my phone number. 371-2621.
And Mapu?
You can reach me at my email, mfriends@gmail.com. So mfriends808@gmail.com. Or give me a call at 469-5330. Yeah.
So thank you, ladies. Appreciate it so much. We'll have to have you back on. We got to see your columns. We got to get you guys to write a column for the magazine. So thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening. and share it with your friends and families. Don't forget, you can go on to generations808.com for any past shows. So, as always, everybody, aloha and live well.